human mother tongue, connection, friendship, control, creation of tomorrow and others, tests and reasons. Sri Maitreya said, first Rudra, having been ordered by Brahma, circumambulated his father, the master of the Vedas. Addressing him with words of assent, he entered the forest to perform austere penances. Translation responsibly. Sri Maitreya said, first Rudra, having been ordered by Brahma, circumambulated his father, the master of the Vedas, addressing him with words of assent. He entered the forest to perform austere penances. And we'll read text 21-22 and the purport. Text 21. Atavijayata sargam dasha putra prajagire bhagavashakti yuktasya loka santana hetava. Brahma, who was empowered by the Supreme Personality of God, full of daring living entities and begot 10 sons for the extension of the generations. Text 22. Varichya triyangiraso pulastya pulaha kratu prigru vasisto dakshascha. Translation. Marishri Atri Angira Balascha La Kratu Prigu Vasista Daksha, and the 10th son Narada were thus born. The whole process of the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation is meant to give a conditioned soul a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. Brahma created Rudra to help him in this creative endeavor. But from the very beginning, Rudra began to devour the whole creation, and thus he had to be stopped from such devastation, from such devastating activities. Brahma therefore created another set of good children, who were mostly in favor of worldly fruitive activities. He knew very well, however, that without devotional service to the Lord, there is hardly any benefit for the conditioned souls, and therefore he at last created his worthy son, Narada, who is the supreme spiritual master of all transcendentalists. Without devotional service to the Lord, one cannot make progress in any department of activity. Although the path of devotional service is always independent of the material, only transcendental loving service of the Lord can deliver the real goal of life, and thus the service rendered by Srimad Narada Muni is the highest among all the sons of Brahma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself said, I am God, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'm trying my best to speak something. So in his third canto, in different chapters, later on in chapter 25, chapter 20, we'll still hear some more about this process of creation, maintenance, annihilation, as well as the different progenitors, etc., who populated the universe under the order of Lord Brahma, of course. So the first line in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how this whole process of creation of the material world, the maintenance and the dissolution, is meant to give us conditioned souls an opportunity to actually go back home, back to Godhead. Now naturally we always ask when we read these sections, Particularly also in the second canto, where we hear a lot about time, about sarga and visarga, tedious information pertaining to the creation of the gross and subtle elements, prakriti, mahatattva, etc. Sometimes we might wonder what the value or what is the point of hearing about the material creation, about the cosmos. It is not directly Krishna's pastimes, but nonetheless, it is Krishna's multifarious potencies maintaining and sustaining even the material creation. So it is good to give us an understanding of just how insignificantly small we are in relationship to Krishna and his potencies when we're in the material world. Of course, we are, by nature, we are spiritual. But when we come into contact with matter, which is by choice, we become enveloped in the modes of material nature and in the false ego conception. So for a living entity to actually exist in this material world to try to enjoy, the false ego is actually required. Forgetfulness of Krishna and forgetfulness of one's identity in relationship to Krishna is required to exist in the material world. Of course, with the exception to those who are trying to come out the cycle of birth and death, those who surrender to Krishna. So this false ego, which is needed for us to survive in the material world, Srila Prabhupada later on explains how this false ego concept is twofold. It's the mentality of wanting independence from Krishna and also the enjoying spirit within the living entity. So within the false ego, the false concept of the self, these two attributes are made very, very strong, and these drive, of course, the living entity to try to lord over the material nature. So this false ego immediately develops in the Mahatattva, being the aggregate of consciousness. This false ego is being created, and then it combines with the modes of material nature. And in this way, when the living entity gets in touch, or when it gets agitated or affected by these modes, the natural proclivity or the real nature of the living entity is covered, and the living entity is then able to exist in this material world in forgetfulness of Krishna. So all these elements have been created. Primarily, of course, Krishna is the primary creator. And secondarily, by Lord Brahma, he is the secondary creator. So it is this false ego which envelops or which covers the real identity of the soul, so that the soul can actually live out its term in the material world and gets the realization and the understanding that this material world is a place of misery, and hopefully start its journey back home, back to Godhead. So hence, Srila Prabhupada opens the first line of this purport by explaining how this process of creation, maintenance, and dissolution is meant to give us a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. Having gone through the entire cycle of identifying with the false ego, associating with the three modes of material nature, associating with the material body, the senses, the expansion of all these things, having gone through that since time immemorial, the living entity has an opportunity at some point to actually end this repeated cycle, which is basically suffering. The pure spirit soul cannot be completely satisfied in the material situation, just as a fish cannot survive outside of water. It is not in its original state. So it is required that the living entity reconnects with Krishna to revive the dormant love, the ananda, the bliss, and its eternal spiritual form. So thus far we have heard about the creation that Brahma had to perform. So the first things earlier on in the text, we were hearing how Brahma first had to create the ignorance and illusion that allows the soul to live with the false concept. He had to create self-deception, a sense of death, anger that that arises from frustration, false ownership, and the illusory bodily concept of life. So all these elements Lord Brahma had to create because it is required for the living entity to be in a state of forgetfulness. In the spiritual world, we understand that everyone is aware of Krishna, their relationship, how we are always subordinate parts and parcels of Krishna. We solely exist by satisfying Krishna, satisfying his senses. But if we want to be independent from Krishna, we require a different field. We require a different field of activities. We require to take on a material body. We require to go into a material universe, planet, to try to live out these desires that have arisen. So the required ignorance and illusion allows the living entity to continue on its journey of ignorance. For us to actually live in this world, to try to enjoy, we have to forget about Krishna. That's just the deal. And it is a very tedious affair for Lord Brahma because he does not want to perform this service because he understands that it means the living entity are going to be in forgetfulness of Krishna. So earlier on we had heard how Lord Brahma wasn't really inspired to create all these illusory facets, but it was his service, so he had to continue, and he wanted to do his service well. So while he was creating all these illusions and ignorance, etc., he was dissatisfied, and he went and purified himself again by meditating on the Supreme Lord. And his dissatisfaction, of course, came because the first part of his creation, which is, of course, bringing about a whole lot of ignorance and illusion, he had to try to populate the universe as much as he could. So he created his four sons, of course, the four Kumaras, who were very, very advanced spiritually, so they rejected their father, who was also in the role of the guru. They rejected the order to populate the universe, and Lord Brahma had to rethink and re-strategize how to perform his service properly. So after that, he purified himself by meditating on Krishna, and then he started his second part of the his sub-creation, which is creating based on knowledge. So, actually I said something wrong there. The first part of Lord Brahma's creation, of course, was creating out of ignorance. And then the second part of his creation was creating out of knowledge. And this is where he created his four sons, the four Kumaras. And in that creation, the four Kumaras, of course, propounded different types of philosophy, Sankhya, mysticism, Vairagya, and the austerity or tapasya. So because the Kumaras were very, very highly elevated and advanced spiritually, they didn't want to take part in expanding the universe. And because of that, Lord Brahma became angry. He checked his anger by not expressing it as much. However, it forced its way out, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purpose, and that forceful nature came out in between his eyes in the form of Rudra. So the nature of Rudra, of course, was very, very destructive, along with his offsprings. So Lord Brahma had to pacify Rudra and explain to him that he should go somewhere and perform meditation, and when it is time for his service to come about, Lord Brahma will call up on him. So Lord Brahma intelligently inspired Rudra and his offsprings to turn into peaceful meditation And he assured them that when the time was right, which was the time of annihilation, the rudras would be invoked, and his services would be needed then. So there was a time and place for both rudras' actions to be, or rudras' qualities to be exhibited. But for the purpose of creation and maintenance, it wasn't necessary. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport that we should be very, very wary of our anger. That this was a lesson, that we should be able to check our anger and try to control our anger as it can become destructive to our Krishna consciousness. So that was given in this pastime where Lord Rudra was forcibly produced from the first chapter of Lord Brahma, so to speak. Following on that, we understand from the Bhagavad Gita, where it explained how the immediate causes of anger, which are lust and greed, can lead to the downfall of the spirit soul. So there is a there's a few bhajans, or there's a few excerpts written by Srila Narottam Das Thakur, where he speaks about how to purify the six enemies of the mind. So in one of Lord Narottam Das Thakur's bhajans called Anyabhigas Chali, there's a section between text stanzas 10 to 14 where he explains further on how to deal with the six enemies of the mind, including anger. So he, and later on it's explained by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Sri Bhakti Aloka, how to deal with these enemies of the mind. So Srila Narottam Das Thakur explains that I shall fight lust, anger, bewilderment, greed, madness, envy and pride. Defeating them, I will become blissful at heart, and I will easily become able to worship Lord Govinda. If lust is not controlled, it becomes the breeding ground for a host of vices and checks one's advancement on the path of devotional service. However, if one stays in the association of the saintly devotees, then that association will carry him beyond the influence of lust, anger, and their friends. I shall not become angry. I shall renounce anger. I shall become free from my six enemies, such as greed and bewilderment. I shall control my mind and always remember Lord Krishna Chandra. When lust and his friends hear the word Govinda, they immediately begin to flee, as a herd of elephants flees when it hears a lion's roar. If one engages in single-pointed devotional service to Lord Krishna, then the worshipper attains transcendental bliss and all kinds of calamities flee from him. Then Sri Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains further, I will engage lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, envy and pride in appropriate ways, and by defeating these enemies, I will feel happiness in my heart as I peacefully worship Govinda. I will engage lust by offering it in Krishna's service. Anger I will direct towards those who are envious of the devotees. I will be greedy to hear the topics of Hari in the association of devotees. I will feel illusioned without achieving my worshipable Lord. I will be maddened while singing the glories of Krishna. In this way, I will engage these enemies in their proper places. The confidential meaning of the song is that the duty of an intelligent person is to direct these urges away from their respective subjects and make them favorable to devotional service. That can only be done with patience. So this was from particularly also the Prema Bhakti Chandrika of Srila Narottam Das Thakur. So these qualities, particularly anger, lust, greed, illusion, madness, of course envy, Srila Prabhupada explained that we cannot really, also Narottam Das Thakur explained that we cannot really while in the process of sadhana bhakti, engage envy. Srila Prabhupada would often explain envy as indirect appreciation. In the spiritual world, however, we can read in the Nectar of Devotion, in the state of mad love for Krishna, the gopis sometimes become envious, but of course this is spiritual envy that is giving pleasure to Krishna and Krishna's parts and parcels, where they're all either competing to get Krishna's attention or to satisfy Krishna's senses more and more. They may become greedy of Krishna's bamboo flute. They may become greedy because the buffalo horn is always on Krishna, tied to his waist. Or they may become greedy because of the peacock feather that is always on Krishna's head. So that is always giving pleasure to Krishna's service and to Krishna himself. That transcendental envy produces a great love or desire, a longing to be with Krishna. Whereas in this material world, envy is indirect appreciation, so that has to be removed from the heart. Whereas these others, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was explaining how we can engage them and purify them in Krishna's service while always thinking of Krishna. There's one point of note that Srila Prabhupada mentions, that we can get rid of the lower tendencies or the lower qualities by engaging them in Krishna's service and always being in Krishna consciousness. And we cannot just do it in a very, very mechanical way, but we have to always be aware that Krishna ultimately is one who will help us uproot these lower tendencies. We, of course, sincerely endeavor, we play our part, we try to purify ourselves by following the nine processes of bhakti as best as we can, and then the rest, of course, we are always dependent on Krishna's mercy. So it's our endeavor and Krishna's mercy, as shown in the pastime of Mother Yashoda binding Lord Krishna to a running water. That she endeavored to run after Krishna, to get the rope to tie around Krishna's waist. She did everything she could in her might and her strength, but ultimately it was Krishna's mercy which allowed her to conquer the unconquerable. So in one sense, because we, in our conditioned state, we are very, very small, we are unimmersed, so insignificant. The fact that we become involved in the three modes of material nature has made us very, very forgetful of our spiritual potency. So only by Krishna's mercy can he actually help us unweave this forgetfulness of our position and his position and how our relationship should run. So by endeavoring to get rid of these tendencies, Krishna will, of course, reciprocate accordingly, and then eventually weed out these lower qualities that attack us because of being in the material world. Having a material body means so many things. It's not that just you have, you know, low intelligence, or you have a cheating propensity, you become illusioned, etc. All these things are there, but there's so many handicaps of having a material body. We are subjected to so many things. In essence, really, there's nothing that great about having our material body. And you can realize this in the morning when you get up. Everything you have to do to clean the body. And when you get older, it doesn't get any easier. You know, the body's changing. Different things are stronger, or they start getting weaker. It is embarrassing sometimes. So the material body has many, many handicaps in one sense. But at the same time, it is a tool, it is a vessel that we use to try to attain Krishna. So we use our intelligence, we use our mind, we use our body and our senses in the service of the Lord. Although it is a bad bargain, we have a very, very short lifespan. Nonetheless, we're using it as best as we can. So by engaging our body, gross and subtle, we can purify it and we can eradicate the lust, anger, greed, and all the other friends that come with it, all the other friends that come with having a false ego, with having an enjoying spirit separately from Krishna. So all this misidentification can gradually be removed the more we take to Krishna consciousness, the more we focus our energy on hearing about Krishna and serving Krishna and his devotees. So the next set of sons that I mentioned here, Marichi, Ashri, Angira, Daksha, nine of them were inclined to fruitive activities. And there was a specific mention to Narada, who was considered the best because he is the embodiment of pure emotional service. So Narada, of course, who is the Deva Rishi, the sage amongst the demigods, he is he can deliver Krishna to anyone he to any person that he may come across. As Prabhupada mentions that later in the purport, that Narada, just his name Narada, the Supreme Lord, and Da, one who can deliver. So Lord, Narada Muni is considered the best because he can give the Supreme Lord to others wherever he travels. The Supreme Lord, of course, as mentioned, cannot be realized by any amount of Vedic knowledge or by any number of penances. So the differentiation that's been made between Narada Muni and his other brothers, of course, who were more attracted to fruitive activities, is that Narada was 100% particularly only vested in pure devotional service, which is supremely independent. So Marichi and the other brothers are representatives of other processes. There's the jnana process, there's the karma, vairagya, etc., yoga. They represent so many processes. However, Srila Prabhupada and commentary to text 22, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that all these other processes of jnana, bhakti, vairagya, yoga, mysticism, they can only become successful by the performance of bhakti. Without the performance of bhakti, these processes are fruitless. Hence, Narada Muni is not interested in separately trying to perform mysticism or renunciation, etc. He directly tries to perform pure devotional service and travel and spread the glories of Krishna. So, bhakti gives all results. Bhakti is not dependent on any other limb or any other process. It is the very form of all results. Everything culminates in bhakti. So bhakti is represented in the form of Narada Muni. This is a particular commentary given by Vishwanath Thakur. Later on, of course, chapters 25 and so on, and prior to this, there's been a similar discussion going on between Shaunaka Rishi, Sita Goswami, again talking about this process of sub-creation. So in chapters 5, 6, 8, 12, 25, again there's mentioning about how Lord Brahma is creating. There is mentioning of how Lord Brahma has to create darkness. Once again, he has to create the five types of ignorance in order for the living entity to exist in this world and to exert their material desires under Tamishra, Moha, Mahamoha. So Lord Brahma has to create all these illusions and ignorances again, and this is repeated over and over again in the same canto, and of course it is mentioned in the second canto as well. And I was thinking, why over and over again we're hearing about the same elements being created, the same ignorance story, how the living entity is entrapped in the false conception of I and mine, false proprietorship, false ownership. It's because the covering is so thick that we have to hear this information constantly to understand our very, in one sense, our very fallen condition of thinking that we are the Lord and Master of what we survey. So this information is repeated, not once or twice, but three times, but many, many times in the Srimad Bhagavatam, to show the gravity of the conditioned soul's forgetfulness of Krishna, and to what extent that forgetfulness has landed us in a cycle of repeated birth and death. Therefore, by understanding or by reading these subject matters over and over again, we hopefully get to a point where we become humbled and embarrassed in a good way, understanding how we've misused our intelligence, and try through this process of understanding how this creation is happening, the maintenance and the destruction, how all of this is happening, to fulfill our material desires. So this should humble us and, as Prabhupada mentions, give us an opportunity, the intelligence, to actually then want to break out of the cycle and go back home, back to Godhead. So by understanding what mistakes we've made, we do not repeat. The mistake we've made of identifying with our material body, of embracing the false conception of the self, embracing the illusion, the madness, the false ownership and proprietorship, once we can get that out of our system by the bona fide process of bhakti, then Krishna, as he mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, that he will protect our bhakti and we'll gradually go back to him, back to Godhead. But these are important topics and subject matters that we have to hear and understand. And not only in this section, not only from Lord Brahma, it will come as well from Lord Kapila Dev when he's also instructing his mother on the process of devotional service, and how the process of devotional service is the only process that will annihilate the false ego. All the other processes of jnana and karma, fruit of activities, mysticism, they actually do not fully eradicate the false ego concept. And the process of pure bhakti is the one that gets rid of the false conception of I'm a separate enjoyer from Krishna. We have an enjoying propensity because we are parts and parcels of Krishna. We have it in minute quantities, and it is meant to give pleasure to Krishna, not to be used separately from Krishna. When we want to use our nature separately from Krishna, we have to do that in the material world. We can't do that in the spiritual world. So all this creation, maintenance, and annihilation, it is going on to fulfill the desires of the conditioned souls, the insignificant desires, with the hopes of that we will eventually wake up and start our journey back home, back to Godhead. Because Krishna is dormant in the heart as the super soul, and he will provide the knowledge for us to actually start making those steps. And he will manifest, of course, as he says, as the spiritual master, he will give us the association of devotees, make our faith strong so that we can hear about his pastimes and we can take on the process of devotional service. So in this way, by understanding that the process of devotional service will give us an opportunity to, or a chance to go back home, back to Godhead, and we do not get attracted by other processes that are not going to actually annihilate the big problem of why we're here, that we're acting on the false ego concept. So the process of bhakti will annihilate that, and we will hear more as we go on about Narada Muni, who is the embodiment of the process of pure devotional service. And by following his footsteps, we can also be in full Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions.
Okay.
Okay, so the question is, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning that without devotional service to the Lord, one cannot make progress in any department of activity. Whereas in the material world, we can see there's so much advancement going on and progress going on, whether it's technological or economical or whatever. So how do we understand that fact? The first thing that comes to mind, what I've understood thus far, what is progress in the material world? So there's been so much progress in the field of math, science, physics, and that progress has a beginning, middle, and end, which means it is progress based on the material platform. So there is no, the result is futile because it ends when the body ends. So we've had progress made by, you know, great minds like Einstein, Beethoven, so many different types of personalities. And that progress, that is material progress. And material progress, as I mentioned, it is futile and it has a beginning, middle, and end. And it doesn't produce any elevation in consciousness. Even for that material progress to come about, the intelligence factor or the even the material intelligence or the ability to discern, etc., in the second canto, it's explained that all these things are actually coming because of the presence of the supersoul in the body. That intelligence is coming about even for persons wanting to progress materially. So this progress that we're seeing out there, it all depends on what we think progress is. In the material world, progress is going on, and abortion is on the rise, animal slaughter is on the rise, mental illnesses is on the rise, and if we look at the news, we'll look at what type of progress we're actually making. So human civilization is not actually progressive, because the consciousness is very animalistic. It is not producing a higher consciousness. So this progress, it is a covering of the external energy. It is an illusion to make people think, this is enjoyment, this is my name, fame, adoration, I have created X, Y, Z, I have gotten a Nobel Peace Prize for what I've created, or whatever it may be. But it is a very, very destructive means of existence. So there's not much progress going on because human civilization is behaving with the platform of, and the platform of animal kingdom. Even if we look at the behavior of animals, you know, animals do not even behave the way human beings behave. Animals don't massacre themselves for no reason. Animals do not kill their, well, some animals actually do. But the way in which human civilization is progressing, it is permissible for someone in this body to abort another living entity. It is seen as pro-choice. We have choices. I am my own person. I can abort 3 months, 4 months. I have a right. These are my human rights. These are my liberties. And that is not progress. We can say we have the technological science to help someone go through that progress. We have scientific research that shows that, that it is okay. We have the medication to help you recover. But that action is not progress. That is a demonic mentality. So yes, out there, the material energy is providing so much variety. You can do this, you can do that. It looks very, very tempting. There's progress in maths and science and physics, but is it actual progress or is it just two-legged animals' progress? It is not anything to have a big celebration over. If we really want to know what happens in the material world, if we find out how things are actually functioning, It is shocking. You know, most of you come from very protected families, you know, very cultured families. Many of you are very protected, but you know, some of us have past lives that were very destructive, and we had progressive lives, but that wasn't really progress. It was nothing but animalistic behavior in a very polished way. So the nature of the material energy is that it fools the living entity into thinking you are advancing, you are gaining fame and adoration for your discovery, discovering elements that have already been there, provided by Krishna's creation. All we do is manipulate things and put our names on a plaque discovered by so-and-so. We manipulate, we rediscover, right? We rediscover, we manipulate. We put our name there, we get our name and fame, but is it leading to an elevation in consciousness? Hardly. It hardly leads to that. A society, as Bhagavad Gita said, a society that does not show or give respect to the cow, women, children, the elderly, and brahmanas is doomed to fail. And we can see that, you know, women are really not much protected at all. And sometimes women are less intelligent because they feed into the system. They do not behave properly, they do not dress properly, and then they get exploited. And it's a whole cycle, a whole web of body identification. I'm a woman, I'm a this, I'm a that. Again, it puts one back on the body identification. So it is a very, the web of Maya, it is very, very difficult to come out of a web. But the so-called progress, it's not really progress for human beings. We're sliding down the scale in terms of our intelligence, morals. If you look at all the categories that I mentioned, you know, the cow, the women, children, the elderly, the brahmanas, there is no respect for all these classes. If we take it one at a time, we look at how animals are being slaughtered, not just the cows. If we just look at how animals are being treated, very, very hypocritical. Protect the dogs, but eat the chicken and eat the lamb. Or protect dolphins and the pandas in Asia, but you were mink. Mink is a cute little fuzzy animal, which is mainly found in very, very cold areas, and people use it for fur. And now the latest fad in the progressive world is to make eyelashes from fur. So this is the latest progress. Even in food, in what people eat, children. In America, there's alarming statistics on video games that are being marketed towards children, and because the parents aren't educated on what violence is, on what is best for children, these video games are purchased and they're very, very violent. So a few years ago, there was a mass shooting in one place called Connecticut, where a young man, 18 or so, went into a school, he had firearms, and he just shot young kids. He started with his mother at home, shot his 52-year-old mother, and then he went to his school, shot a few kids. And the psychologist tried to figure out what was going on, what happened with this kid, what was the family situation, and they were analyzing the lifestyle. Video games, where you get points for killing. So when you're a child, you don't differentiate. It's a video game, it's real life. You just go out and do it. My mother used to tell me when she was in studying in Wales, she was staying with her family, and we all grew up watching Superman, Batman, and you thought it was real, they can actually fly. That, you know, Spider-Man can produce a web, you know, and then go from this building to that building. And kids would think they can also do it. So in the family she was staying with, the kids would go onto the balcony and try to fly like Batman. What happens? They fall. Right, because they cannot differentiate what is reality, actually. So they see the video games, they go out to school, just get a gun from somewhere and kill. So this is a progressive state. So yes, it might seem, the material energy might make it look like there's so much progress going on. And this is not to say, you know, down with, you know, electronics, down with iPhones and whatever. That's not the point. The point is, when not used in Krishna service, it is very, very destructive. But if it's engaged in Krishna service, then the result is eternal. Because at this point, the result is very, very limited. It stays in the material world because it is not elevating the consciousness of the people. Yes, person. Ask ourselves why are they on antidepressants. Then we need to figure out if all these things are alluding back to problematic lifestyle situations, and we have to have a look and see what is it within society that is leading to people to become depressed, to become mentally derailed. But it might be happening in North America, that doesn't mean there's nothing happening in Africa or South America. To varying degrees, this forgetfulness of Krishna or these six enemies of the mind are acting to varying degrees. So we have to look at situations and see what is it within society that is lacking. As Prabhupada said, the reporter said, "Why have you come here?" And he said, "I have come to give people what they have forgotten, Krishna." So what is lacking in people's lives that is leading them to live destructively? And the solution is not always popping a pill. You have to go to the root cause. And some people always say, you Hare Krishnas, you just chant and dance on the street. Why don't you open this and that? And why don't you do this philanthropic work and that and that? And, okay, so if we do that, is that going to get rid of the problem? Or is there a root that we have to chop off? So sometimes the most intelligent thing to do is look at what the root of the problem is, then deal with the root, because without the root, nothing will grow. So it is difficult in this day and age where we want a quick fix. And as Prabhupada also says, this understanding, this progress in Krishna consciousness requires tolerance. It takes time. And people are so impatient and intolerant. That's why you sometimes see a lot of anger. You know, you cut someone on the road, they give you an arm. You're on your bicycle, you're on your bicycle lane, and you change or you turn left, and somehow the other, someone didn't see you, and they just let it rip. Who the hell do you think you are? You know, they say, I won't repeat what they say, but I've had my fair share of words that weren't really nice. And you just gotta keep writing. But it's all pent up. And where is it pent up from? Their life, dissatisfaction in their job, dissatisfaction in relationships, which are exploitative and which are very, very external. So people get frustrated and they do not know what to do with these emotions, and they come out in weird ways. So we have to learn about all these enemies of the mind, how to work with them, and then engage in Krishna service, and they will get purified. But so long as we do not know what we're suffering from, we will not ask for help. You ask anyone on the street, if you do book distribution, here's a book, here's a cookie, here's a card, I'm fine. No, I'm good. My life is great, I have no problems, I'm very happy, and you know, I have money, I have good looks, I have good friends, I'm just fine. Look them in the eye, try and talk to them, they start getting agitated, and then they start getting angry because you just have no conversation. Try saying hello to someone on a tram sometimes. 5 seconds later, they're back on their screen, earplugs on, they can't look at you. It's just very, very impersonal, very, very cold. Why? Because the material world has purified them so much, and not purified in the sense that they're realizing the absolute truth, but they've become so wounded because they're trying to enjoy and squeeze sweetness out of that which has already been chewed millions and millions of times. So there's frustration, pent up frustration. As a kid, you used to chew gum at school. As soon as the teacher comes, stick it underneath your desk. Then tomorrow, take it, start chewing it again. Teacher comes, stick it back. Right, and you keep hoping, maybe there's some sweetness left. You keep chewing it, it becomes harder, but you keep doing it. So that is like in the material world, we've been bashed up and wounded by the material energy that we've just become so cold. And we don't even realize it. So this is the nature of the material world. It is not a fit place. They normally say survival of the fittest. No one survives the material world. No one does. Only the devotee who knows how to be like a Paramahamsa. Who knows how to live in this world and not be of it. Only those who are trained can actually swim with the sharks. Can actually swim over this ocean of nescience. But without the proper training, it is not possible to be in this world and be normal. People have told me they need intoxication to live every week. To block everything out, they need intoxication. They've said this point blank. So many people, oh, you don't drink, you don't smoke, how do you deal? How do you handle things without intoxication? You know, the process of bhakti is training us how to control our senses, especially the mind. But if there's no training for that, there's no hope. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Thank you.